The following podcast is a part of RadioMisfits.com.
Welcome to Misfits Making It. We're oddballs and we're doing cool stuff. I'm your host, Lauren Lojudice. This is the podcast version of the comedy shows I host around New York City and the road. That's the Misfit Variety Show. And all the shows that I produce at the Capiche Club, Misfit Comedy Space, down in Little Italy. So how's it going? How's it going in your Misfit world? I've been kind of making some big decisions. For years, I've been filming character sketches and sending them into a comedy festival that has never given me an audition. So this year, I was like, this is it. This is it. Like, I am putting my best foot forward. I'm putting my craziest, weirdest sketches together, and I'm sending it in. And mic drop, that's what you got. And making a big decision just to kind of, they don't want my presence. I am moving on. And I feel like as misfits, sometimes we got to do that because we're not always welcome in all spaces. And so I just have to say, like, if I'm not your taste, you probably ain't mine. And I'm just going to be honest about that and then move on to much brighter realms, because there's just always more opportunity out there. So that's how I'm doing. And I'm really excited about this interview because we also talk about really being clear about what you want and going after that. Before we go into the interview with Grace Edwards, reminder, please do rate and review our podcast. Misfits trust other misfits to know what's good, so it's super important to show them that you think this is worth their time. You can also sign up for monthly updates at laurenloji.com, or you can sponsor a podcast. We are making it available for individuals or companies to sponsor us. So all the info, laurenloji.com. Click on listen, podcast, and contact us there, and we'll make it happen. One more thing, I promise, before we get to the interview, is we have a Misfit podcast shout out. We've been making some Misfit podcast friends, and we're all telling each other about wonderful podcasts. So here's one called The Multitudes that I'd love for you to know about. It's if you want a deeper, a new perspective in life, and when do we ever not want that, go to The Multitudes. It's with host Nicole Carter. It invites you into conversations about identity, spirituality, social change, and more. Diverse guests sharing transformative stories and practical tools for navigating life's complexities. Fans describe Multitudes as delicious listening, a blend of fun, informative discussions on both modern and timeless topics. Tune in, be inspired, and join the Multitudes. Go look them up. They're super fun. And now we're going to go into the podcast with writer Grace Edwards. I love this interview because I feel like this is a time of resetting. It's January. Maybe resetting for you is a different time of the year, but it's a moment in which to reflect on what you're doing. And Grace talks a lot about really knowing what you want and digging deep and finding your voice and just being clear to everyone and to yourself what that is. So she has a lot of great resources, information, and stories, and I'm super inspired by what she's doing. Let's get to the interview with Grace Edwards. Thank you, Grace Edwards, for joining us on Misfits Making It.
Hi, well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, you've written on some of the coolest shows, and you have a lot of stuff coming up of your own. And so how did you get started on this journey doing incredibly cool things?
Well, I always kind of knew that I wanted to work in entertainment in some way, shape, or form. I was a little kid who loved to read. I made friends with the librarians at the library. So mm-hmm. I was kind of a nerd in school and not very popular. So, I would just wait till I got home from school, and we used to live across the street from a library. And so I would just go and check out a ton of books. And, so I was always like obsessed with stories. And, when I was like 8, I remember my mom was sitting on the front porch and I said, "Mom, I'm going to be an actress." And she's just like, okay. Like, clearly she was just like, she's going through a phase, but much to her and my dad's dismay, it was not a phase. And I kind of stuck with it. I did theater in high school. I went to college at the University of Michigan. I studied acting and English. And then shortly after I graduated from college, I moved out to New York to pursue acting. But I just couldn't find a lot of parts that were right for me. It was sort of like that period in the 2000s when there just wasn't a lot of Black stuff being made. So I was just like, well, let me try to like take a writing class to learn how to write for myself. So I enrolled in the NYU School of Continuing Education class, and there was this like British guy that was teaching it, who told us he was in the country illegally and he was getting a divorce, and he would take calls from his divorce lawyer.
Oh my God. I was going to say NYU is so fancy. Like,
no, he was not doing right. So, but I met this Asian actress while I was there. And so we bonded on, like, there's not a lot of stuff for us right now. So she told me about this free class that was being co-taught between the Writers Guild of America East and Columbia University. And so you had to apply. I applied. Luckily, I got in. And one of the Columbia professors, a man named Jamal Joseph, who's still teaching there, I believe, he was like, I think you might have some talent. So if you apply to Columbia, I'll write you a letter of recommendation. And so the deadline was 2 weeks away. So I just hurried up and I got my applications together. And that was kind of the beginning of my switch from being more of an actor to being more of a writer is when I got into Columbia. And while I was at Columbia, I thought I was going to be like this very like deep like writer that was going to write like all these stories about, you know, history and, you know, and stuff like that. But then I just ended up sort of falling into the comedy track. And I just realized how much I love making people laugh. And I realized that a lot of the messages and stuff that I wanted to get across were actually more effective in many ways through comedy, because you can kind of sneak some medicine in under a laugh. Yep. And so, while I was at Columbia, I did an internship at Comedy Central. And it was a great experience. And I ended up meeting a guy named Dan Powell, who was the head of development at the time at Comedy Central. And, you know, we got along really well. So after I graduated, I hit him up for about a year for a job. And he didn't have anything for a long time until about a year after I graduated. He had a job as a production coordinator on a show called Ugly Americans, which was an animated show on Comedy Central, like in the early 2000s, or I guess 2010s, I guess, early 2010s. And so that was my first job in the industry. And then when he got chosen to be the showrunner of Inside Amy Schumer, I asked if I could be the writer's assistant on that. And so that sort of the first steps in my career working in TV. And then, you know, I was at Schumer as an assistant for 4 years. Until I got my first job as a writer, which was on Loosely Exactly Nicole, starring Nicole Byer, in, I believe that was 2016. So, and then, you know, then came Kimmy and Insecure and everything after that. So, yeah, that's kind of my little journey.
And what was it like when you were, like, when you decided to make that shift from acting to writing? What was that like for you? Because that was a huge shift in concentration.
Yeah, it required a lot of me, actually, because I'm like, and a lot of my friends in Hollywood don't even know me like this, because I'm just like a ham. Like, I've definitely had an actress personality. Even when I first started at Columbia, I would like be jumping in the fountains and just loved attention all the time. And so I kind of had to calm that down, because when you are working behind the camera, nobody really has patience for that. So I kind of had to like reel that part of my personality back, which sometimes makes me sad because I do miss being so over the top all the time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think I realized that as an actor, I would always be asking somebody to hire me or asking for permission to be in someone's project. And the thing I love about writing is that, you know, regardless of where you are, what you're doing, you can always do it. Like, you don't, there's no permission required. You can always sit down at your computer and write something, or even if you can't sell it, you can write it.
Yeah.
So I think that that just made me feel so much more empowered as an artist. And I realized that at the heart of what I always wanted to do is to make more stories about people like me. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm Black, I'm an immigrant, I'm a woman. You know, I have all these identities and I feel have been sort of underrepresented in Hollywood. So it felt like more of a calling than acting.
Gotcha.
Because I was just like, oh, I can actually affect change. I can create jobs. I can do all the things that I couldn't do as an actor. I mean, you eventually can. I mean, if you get to the place of like, you know, bigger mm-hmm. actors like Tom Cruise, you know, he can make things happen. But yeah, it takes a long time and a lot of luck in getting to the top 1% of those kind of actors to be able to do that. Whereas a writer can create a show or create a movie, you know, out of their imagination and have a lot of power in the creation, especially in TV in particular.
Right. Yes. It's interesting too. I find like what people around, like as I've like shifted in my career, like people have, it's always sometimes very telling about like what's going on with them. Like I've had some people in my family who are frustrated maybe with like their career path. They'd be like, mm-hmm. like one was like, oh yeah, all that schooling wasted, you know, cause I was a teacher and then I became an actor. It was like, nothing's wasted.
Nothing is wasted. Yeah. That's a very small way to look at the world. And, you know, what I try to tell my little brother, who is 9 years younger than me, and I try to tell like any young person I talk to that, you know, I have some mentees and, you know, an assistant and stuff. I'm just like, anything in life is not permanent. Like even when you look at what we're going through in our industry right now, mm-hmm. where AI is sort of threatening us, nothing is permanent. And so in life, you just take the chances that you want to take. And some of them are going to work out. Some of them are not going to work out. But, you know, you can say when you close your eyes forever that you tried to achieve your dreams. And yeah, nothing is wasted. Like your schooling for being a teacher will come in handy in your acting work and your writing work, whatever you do. It's all part of what makes you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it like gives you something to write about or act on is if you have like a bit like, because I find sometimes people are ashamed of having life experience when they are a writer or an actor. And I wish more people knew it was like actually a benefit to have life experience.
Yeah, it totally is. I mean, I know so many like writers who started off in other disciplines that ended up, you know, using that to their advantage. Like I know writers who were lawyers before and then got hired as legal consultants on shows and then ended up writing for that show. You know, there's so many ways that you can use your background. And I also think that just makes you a better creative person. I'm so glad that I did, as much as I hated being an assistant and as much as it was frustrating for me because it took about 5 years after I graduated from film school to make any real progress in the industry. As annoying as that time was, all the terrible little jobs that I had and all the experiences that I had, even, you know, as an assistant, some of the writers who pissed me off, like those are all like characters, or they're all moments, they're all things that you can actually mine for your stories. So it's nothing is wasted, you know?
Yeah, totally. And so there's some debate, you know, like do people need film school? Do they not? Like, what would you, having been through it, what would you recommend?
Well, I would say for me, I think I, Grace, needed it because I have never been super good at being like learning just on my own. Like right now I started writing a book, just something that I'm trying while I'm on strike. And I was just like, yes, I've written like 7 pages of it, but I'm starting a novel writing class like this weekend. So, cause I know for me, the way for me to make progress is, you know, doing, it's just having that peer pressure, like, oh, I have an assignment due or whatever. But if I were one of those more self-directed people, I would say do not go to film school because it is so expensive. I have a lot of loans. I had no loans from college, but I have a ton of loans from grad school. I believe Columbia, when I went there, for tuition, room and board for the first 2 years was $60,000 per year.
Wow.
So, and I am one of the more fortunate people from my school, like, you know, out of the dozens of people who were in my class and, you know, classes before me or in the after me, there's not, like, probably only about 20% of us are making our living full time doing this. And when you put yourself in that much debt, it really cripples you. Like, luckily I haven't had to pay it for 3 years because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And I actually got to see how my earnings would be if I didn't have to pay those every month. It's a huge, huge burden. So if you are a person who knows, okay, if I could sit down and figure out how to write, or if I could just do a class, a local class, or I'm the type of person who will just shoot something on my phone. And like, you know, if you're more of a self-directed person, then I would recommend no one go to film school. It's just too expensive. Unless you, for some reason, get a full scholarship, and they very rarely give those to MFAs in this country. So yeah, I would say no, if you can avoid it.
And what about like the networking aspect? Is that, can you get that elsewhere and in other ways besides that film school?
You can, because honestly, nobody from film school helped me. There are some schools, like I believe like USC and UCLA, where they more set you up for success afterwards. Columbia, when I went there, was not like that. Now, it is beginning to change. I'm actually on the film advisory board for the department now. And so we now have instituted a mentorship program. You know, we are trying to, you know, we're all working together to try to make it better for the students that come out.
Yeah.
But when there was nothing like that for me, for sure. And I never had any professors or anything that helped me afterwards either. So the networking really didn't come into play through film school. But the internships I did while I was at film school, those were the most useful things to me afterwards. So I always recommend that if you end up in film school, that make sure that you get in some internships at the companies, because that is going to help you create the relationships that will help you afterwards. So the person that helped me was Dan Powell, who I interned for at Comedy Central. But yeah, I mean, wow. Columbia did not set me up or whatever. Wow. They gave me a great education, so I can, you know, thank them for that. But there was no like post.
Yeah. This is what to
post
do.
Graduation help of any kind.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. And like, are those internships just because people might listening to this be like, well, how do I even get an internship? Like, it seems like there's definitely a pipeline from schools, but then like, how does someone who's doing DIY path do it?
Well, I would say that for comedy in particular, like a lot of my friends got started at UCB or Groundlings or Second City, you know, either putting up shows like sketches or doing improv. A lot of my friends got in through stand-up. So if that's something that interests you, and even if you aren't like a performer, so those things might sound horrific mm-hmm. to you. Even if you're not a performer, a lot of people have also gotten in through the agencies. So becoming like, you know, getting on someone's desk or working at an agency or a management company. You know, I know like my one coworker I'm thinking of right now from Insecure, that's he started out as an assistant at UTA. I have another friend that I went to film school with. She was assistant at CAA, and then she ended up being J.J. Abrams' assistant, and now she's like a very accomplished writer and director. So there are different ways. Like it's like getting into contact with producers that is the most useful. So if you can get a job as a, you know, here in L.A., you can get a job as a writer's PA or a PA of any kind. Just make yourself really indispensable at your job. And then after you've proven yourself, like tell them, hey, I have the script, or hey, I have this short, mm-hmm. or, you know, come see me in my Groundlink show or whatever. Yeah. You know, it's just all about putting yourself in front of the right people, also being prepared, you know, having your samples be in good condition, and just also being nice. Just being nice to people, like being a pleasure to be around. I feel like a lot of people, especially there's a perception that like, oh, if you're a genius, you can kind of be a dick to people. Yeah. And I think maybe in the past that might've been true, but definitely not. Now. I would rather work with, you know, run a project right now. I would rather work with somebody who's like kind of talented and a nice person than somebody who's a genius and is going to just thwart me at every turn. Yeah. So being nice and being a person that is fun to be around is actually really important.
Yeah, I've heard a bunch of people talk about that. Like someone, I think Marie Bamford was like, look at Tom Cruise and how much he works. He's just the nicest guy. You're like,
yeah. I mean, it makes, and you'll see, like, you'll be like, what happened to that actor? Like, what happened to that person? Why don't you ever see them? And then you get to Hollywood and you hear the whispers, oh, that person is crazy. They would not come out of their dressing room, or they'll do this or they'll do that. And, you know, it doesn't matter how famous you are at a certain point. Like, everybody's fame has ebbs and flows. And if your fame is ebbing, that if you have been nice to people, then you will keep working. But if your fame is ebbing and you've been shitty to people, they're not going to bend over to try to help you.
I think, what did Tina Fey say? She was like, no one's worth it, but Elaine Stritch, like, she doesn't wear pants, but she comes on time. You know, she gives us a little trouble. That's it. Elaine Stritch. That's it.
Yeah. No one's worth it. Yeah. That's what I genuinely believe, that that's like not worth it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not worth it to work with difficult people, because the production in general has just, it's hard from the beginning. Like, you know, managing that level of people, like, you know, writers and actors and crew and all that different stuff. It's a very hard job anyway, but if you add terrible personalities on top of it, it's going to be awful. Yeah. But luckily, I've mainly worked with good people. So,
I think sometimes, like, you know, people talk about like insular Hollywood groups and how Hollywood can become insular. Sometimes, though, I think it's like people work with the same people for a long time just because it's so hard. Things can get so difficult. You really got to get people you trust.
Yeah. I mean, it's really wonderful when you find somebody that you can be a creative partner with. Like, it's sort of like, oh, you get my sense of humor. Like, you know, I have a list of writers, you know, whenever my show gets greenlit someday, I have a list in my head of people who have been both nice and also really get my humor and stuff like that. So, people work with each other. You know, I've you know, even worked with a lot of the same people over and over again. So, yeah, it's hard. Like, you can be like a funny person, but it's about your sensibility also matching up with the people that you work with. It's a funny thing.
And how do you figure that out? If the sensibility matches?
You just, first of all, you have to, that's one of your first things, like branding wise as a writer, is you sort of have to figure yourself out, because if you don't figure yourself out, the industry will put you in a place and it may not be the place that you want to be. Mm-hmm. So like when I signed with my reps, I was just like, listen, I want to do cable and streaming comedies between 10 and 13 episodes per season. I want them to be female focused. I want them to be interesting. I want to work on shows that would be nominated for Emmys. Like, that mm-hmm. is the person I want to be. So if you try to send me to some gig that is, you know, too broad or whatever, I'm not going to like it. Right. Yeah. And, you know, they listened. So that is exactly what my career has looked like, is I've worked on mainly female centered streaming and cable comedies with almost everyone that I looked up to when I was younger. I've worked with Tina, obviously, and, you know, she's been an idol of mine ever since she was at Saturday Night Live. And I've worked with Issa, who I've admired ever since she did Awkward Black Girl. You know, I've worked with, you know, Michelle Buteau now, whose comedy I really loved. So, so it's important for you to know what kind of thing that you want to do and communicate that to your reps. And hopefully they can get you to the right places that you need to be. And then as far as whether you fit on a show or not, you just can't know. You can have an idea. Like, I adored 30 Rock and watched every episode and could probably recite it like the back of my hand. So I hoped that I was good enough to work with Tina and Robert. So luckily they hired me and I worked out. But I think that if I didn't work out, it wasn't necessarily because I was bad at what I was doing. It was just that we didn't vibe. I've definitely had one situation where it was clearly not a match. But otherwise, I've been pretty lucky with being able to be hired on places where I fit.
That's really cool, because a lot of people are like, I'll just do anything. And there's a lot of power to be like, this is what I want and say it.
Yeah, because like when you first, especially when you start working in comedy, like what your reps will usually send you is a bunch of packets, like for late night shows, like, you know, monologue jokes and stuff like that. But at a certain point, after my manager was sending me that at first, I was like, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not doing another packet. And then she, to her credit, she stopped sending them to me. And for me, that meant like, I'm going to spend my energy in trying to make my pilot sample as good as possible, rather than spending so much time doing packets, because I don't want to work on late night. That was just never something that, was interesting to me because of the sort of transient nature of it. I really love like having time to dig into like story arcs and characters. I mean, I started out as an actor, so that is what interests me in building a relationship with an audience. So narrative was always like what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I think that when writers are starting out or actors are starting out, they think that they can just have to do whatever, but you can choose to be more selective. It may take you more time. You know, like I said, I did not get my first job until about 5 years and after I graduated from film school. But I'm glad I didn't waste my time.
Yep.
Like once I actually got my foot in the door, it was doing the things that I actually really wanted to do. So yeah, it's just don't be afraid of like saying, this is what I want and this is the only thing I want and I don't want anything else.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you can end up on the wrong path and then trying to make your way back. Just waste time, you know.
Do you think you'll act again and then maybe in anything you have coming up? maybe?
Yeah, for sure. Like I have, I don't even know if I'm supposed to talk about it because the strike stuff is so crazy. But I have a project right now that I will, that should be coming out this year that I am in, a movie. And then, I definitely have TV projects where I will cast myself in it. But it's just different. Like now my focus is on the writing first, and the acting second. So yeah, I still love it. I mean, every time I get, you know, on Insecure, we were allowed to sort of, be in our episode. And I remember that was like my favorite day. Like I would love it. Like getting my little trailer, get my hair done, my makeup done and get on set and stuff like that. So I definitely still love acting. But now it's just like when I was a child, like my mother opened the piano the other day and I had carved on the inside, "I must act." So that was the energy that I was coming with as a child. So I feel like it switched. Like, whereas before I could not picture not acting, now I can't picture not writing. So I feel like writing is number one, just because I just get to express myself in that way. But yeah, I definitely have aspirations to get back into acting at some point.
Yeah.
In fact, me and my friend are plotting like a short film that, you know, I would do independently. And she would direct and I would co-write and star in. That would be, you know, me returning to acting. So hopefully I'll get it together and do that, because we just learned that I am not the biggest self-directed person. Like I need a paycheck or a school or something like that to make me do stuff. So, but I'm hoping, you know, since the strike seems to be going on forever, that we can at least make a good deal of progress with, you know, producing that before the strike is over or shortly after.
Yeah, very cool. And like, what does that feel like to be stepping back into when you switch from writer to actor? What has that felt like for you?
It just feels, usually when I'm acting these days, it's something I've written. So it's actually really fun because I know exactly how I want it to sound. So like, that's the thing about being a writer, is that when you cast actors, they bring their own self to it.
Yep.
And sometimes you, even with the most talented actor, it doesn't get to where you want it to be. But when you're doing it yourself, you're like, I know exactly the cadence. I know my exact intention. So it feels nice. But on the flip side of that, sometimes actors can actually make your words better. It's cool to collaborate with actors. I love actors. I am one. So it's like, yeah, I love working with actors because they can bring something new and fresh to the words. But then I also like doing it myself, because then I can literally cut and print what was in my head into
put it in there.
Yeah.
Lisa Kron once said she was in a, when she first, she used to do a lot of her own work and then she would do plays and she would just, I would just look at the other person and think in my head as I'm waiting for them to respond, like, just say it right. Just say it. It's a little bit of that.
Yeah. I mean, that is, you know, the challenge of acting too. It's just like, sometimes I would be out of it like that too.
Yeah.
Like I would just be like, what's my next thing? Say it right or do whatever. But the real magic is like when you can get to the point when you're acting where you're just like, what happened? Like you're so in it and you're really listening to the other person. And that's when the magic can really happen.
Super fun. And what was the moment where you knew like the traditional path wasn't going to be for you?
I don't think there was ever a moment where I thought about something traditional. Like I try to think about what I wanted to be before I wanted to be an actor, and I can't think of it. I know that I always loved to read. So maybe when I was really little, I'd want to be like work at the library or something. But for me, I just always was like, if you speak to my mother, she would be like, Yeah, in the grocery store, like you used to love to wear these fluffy dresses and spin and bow. And that's what you would do. And so I feel like I was always sort of on the outside. Like my parents are immigrants. We're from Michigan, where there's not a lot of immigrants. And, you know, I grew up going to like a Republican leaning Catholic school.
Where I was one of the black kids.
So like I was always, it was like fitting in was never a thing that was a, like, of course, every child wants to, but it was just never going to be a reality just because of where I was. So once I began to see being different as something that I could use to my advantage, I realized that, art, like some sort of the arts was where I belonged. Because I always wanted to like see myself represented in some way. So I can't remember wanting anything traditional. Although my parents definitely wanted traditional for me, but it was never something that I wanted.
Yeah, I admire that because it took me so, I just kind of believed what my family, but I came from a very Italian American family. So they make pension benefits. And that's why I became a teacher for 3 years after college and then was like, wait a minute, I just got to do what I love to do. And so then went into acting.
Right? Yeah. I mean, I think that everybody's journey is so different and like the experiences that you had is just going to make your art richer and deeper, you know, because there's so many things that I wish I had done differently. You know, I wish I kept performing when I was in film school, or I wish I had lived abroad for a bit. You know, we all have regrets, but I feel like at the end of the day, like the trajectory that I had was meant to be my trajectory, even though it took longer than I wanted, you know? So I think that, the life of an artist is always fighting that. You know, I love the book, The Artist's Way. And so even when I graduated from college and I moved to New York, you know, to pursue acting, I wasn't doing a lot of acting. I was just like getting my bearings and like in the city and not doing a lot of things. But that is the book that kind of helped get me to take the writing class. It helped get me to do that kind of stuff because it to be an artist in this extremely corporate world that, you know, that we're even dealing with as artists right now, the AMPTP, you know, the who we're on strike against. I think it's very hard. There's going to be 1,000 people telling you you can't do it. I had so many people telling me I couldn't do it. Everybody from professors at school to teachers to so-called friends. I can't say my parents never said I couldn't do it, but they tried to steer me in a more practical direction until they realized that there was no hope for that. So they just had to kind of get on board. But I had a whole bunch of people. And then once you see it, you're just kind of like, it's just funny to you now. You're like, okay. And I don't know what it was inside me that was just like, oh, I'm going to make it. Like, you know, I understand that they're saying, because they just can't see it. But I was like, I see it. So, and that's the only person that needs to see it. So, yeah, I just always knew it was going to happen. It's just that, you know, obviously I wanted it to happen sooner.
Well, I mean, like, that's the important, you were saying, of seeing it, of naming it. Like you said, like you were very clear exactly what you wanted to write for. Early on, you were clear, you knew you were going to do something in this world. Because if you don't see it, then you wait, we're going to wait. Like, then you'll listen to other people because it's not, you think it's a reflection of you. It's just that they can't see it. That's all it is.
Exactly. Because they have been sort of programmed in this very specific way. Like there's ways that different people or communities or whatever are programmed in this world that women are taught that we're supposed to be a certain way, you know, different races are taught we're supposed to be a certain way, or there's just not access because of where you live, or that you don't have any nepotism or you didn't go to the right school. There's always going to be something that's going to tell you you can't, but you just have kind of have to listen to that voice inside. Like, what do you really want? Okay. Like, who says you can't have it? And so you just keep marching in that direction. And I'm a big fan. Like, there's this book that Oprah, I used to be a huge Oprah head. Mm-hmm. Still am, but, you know, she doesn't really have everything, something you could watch every day, like when I was a kid. But I remember she had this book called When God Winks. And it's basically about the idea of synchronicity. So I would just look for it everywhere. So even though, you know, at Schumer, they were not promoting me to be a writer, like, I would get like a sketch on the air, or I would get I got my manager, or I would get like a small sign from God or the universe that would tell me, like, okay, all right, here's a little something that just says, keep going. So looking for those things too in your life, like a check shows up that you didn't expect, or like even that situation of me talking to that actress in my terrible NYU class and us bonding, you know, I'm not always the most social person. So the fact that I talked to her at all is a miracle. And that she told me about that free class, which led to me going to Columbia, like all those things. Yeah. You just have to look for like those signs in your life. And then I'm a big also believer in manifestation, like being specific about what you want, write it down. I have a vision board, all that different stuff. Yeah. I really do believe, there's magic. Like once you have your intentions down and, what you really want.
Yeah. You know? I've felt that as well. Like when you really get specific, I have trouble sometimes like letting myself get permission to be specific, like, because we don't know exactly where this road's going to take us. And so it's like, because you want to be open to things you couldn't even dream of, but then also specific, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Like I do something every morning. Like I have this really dope career coach. You know, we haven't worked together in the past few months because I finished the course, but her name is Marie Garvey, and she has this program called Crazy Busy Women in Balance. And so it's about work-life balance, essentially, you know, because a lot of women, as career women, we can either lean too heavily on the family stuff or lean too heavily on the career stuff. It's really hard to keep balance. So I do a morning mindset every morning where I just really take time every morning to think about what I want in my life and to talk about it as if it really has already happened. Like, trust me, somebody in my bedroom in the morning probably think I'm crazy, but like I meditate and I do that every single morning just so I can visualize what I want for my future. And I think that that has been really helpful to me. I'm a big believer in vision boards and writing down what you want and really just having belief in yourself that you can have it, because somebody has it.
Right.
Why can't you have it? Yeah. You know,
absolutely. And in all these moments where, you know, the road gets murky or you're unsure, like what is, we call it misfit inspiration. Mm-hmm. what's something that inspires you, keeps you and going? It could be a book, an article, a movie, whatever. Yeah.
I would say, I guess I would just bring it back to the artist's way. I think the artist's way, if you think that you might be creative, or if you're creative and you're stuck, I think that it's a great book. I do it, you know, maybe once every other year. You know, it consists of like morning pages you write in the morning, you know, journaling, just thinking about different creative prompts, like getting you out of your ruts. I think that that book has had such a huge impact on my life. And just, I am so blessed. I have worked with so many just badass women in comedy that, like my bosses, you know, my mentors inspire me, Tina Fey and Issa Rae and, all these, you know, Michelle Buteau, Danielle Sanchez-Witzel, my showrunner on Survival of the Thickest. Like, there's so many. Prentice Penny, showrunner of Insecure. There's just so many I just watch these people who are so good at what they do that. And instead of feeling jealous or competitive, all I do is just try to soak in the knowledge of, like, even like, I remember Prentice once said to me, and this is something that I take with me all the time, is that he's like, you know, as a showrunner, I'm a painter. And all you writers are like different colors. So if you think I want you to be one thing, I don't. I've hired you because you're green. I already have blue and I have red and I have purple. So, like, paint, you know, in your color and paint well in your color, and don't try to be anything other than what you are, because what you are is what will get you places. So, yeah, I take everything, you know, I listen and I observe and I'm a sponge, so that whenever, you know, I have my own projects, then I take all the advice and just all the observed behavior that I've seen other people that I admire do, and either mimic it or, you know, create my own sort of hybrid of all the different things that I've witnessed over the time.
Now, one thing is I'm an actor and I do stand up. So like when I'm doing stand up or doing a character in public, I can tell what's funny by the audience. Mm-hmm. Then when mm-hmm. I'm like writing a script, I'm like, how do I know what's funny? Like, how do you figure that out? What's some tips on how to figure that out?
Well, what helps me a lot at first, because I come from an acting background, is to say it out loud. I feel like a lot of writers, they just kind of write in silence. And it's important to say it out loud. I can do it myself because I am an actor, but sometimes, like, if you feel stuck or something like that, just get some of your actor friends. Like, can you just come and read the scene out loud for me?
Yeah.
You know? Because I think saying it out loud is, and if you are writing it and you're chuckling, it's usually funny. But I think it's just reps. Like, just like anything. Like, I used to be really bad at writing jokes. I was more of a story person. So I would always be, you know, in the writer's room, I'd always be called in to, like, help break this story or break that story or, like, come up with an idea for a character. Like, I was always good at, like, the bread and butter things of writing. But it took me a while to get good at jokes because, yeah, it's hard to tell sometimes. But the more and more you do it and the more and more you're in rooms and stuff like that, you just kind of begin to get the feel for it. And then, like, I can be a very silly person. So, like, when I'm with my friends, I'll just say wild things all yep. the time. And so I'll just be like, oh, okay. Like, so sometimes when I'm writing, I'll just pretend that I'm, like, with my friends. Yeah. A lot of the characters that I create are very close to myself mm-hmm. too, which helps a lot. Because, you know,
yeah,
you have the best access to mm-hmm. you, or, you know, basing it on a friend or a family member that you think is really funny. Like, mm-hmm. how would they say this? Because I really think, and, you know, I'm a narrative writer, so I really think that comedy should come from character. So for me, if I've created a character that has a, you know, funny sort of refillable game to the character, you know, as your stand-up character, it's kind of like the same thing. It's just yep. sort of like, once you create, you've built that in, then you should be able to continuously generate comedy by putting that person in situations
yep.
that will bring out the funniest parts of themselves, you know, like putting Kimmy Schmidt, for example, which, you know, Jacqueline, who, you know, the most unsophisticated person with this sort of rich woman who has, you know, seen a lot of the world, like, that's going to be funny because just yeah. their personalities and their particular characters put so much, there's so much comedy in the things that they could or would say to each other. So I always just start with the character first and be like, okay, what makes this character funny? And then, okay, this character is funny in these situations. Like, let's put them in these situations, or like, let's mix them with this kind of character that will bring out the funniest parts of this character that I've created.
Super fun. I'm speaking of character. I have a Melania. I have a bunch of characters. One of them, Melania Trump, because you worked on our cartoon president. And you also played Michelle Obama on there, right?
Yes, I got to play both Michelle Obama and Omarosa, ends of the political spectrum. But it was really fun. I mean, the writers over there are really funny and nice. So it was like very fun. Like that's like one of my purest acting jobs, because like I never wrote on that show. Yeah. I just got hired to do voiceover. So it was really, really fun.
Cool. So Melania was very inspired to come talk to you. And so I have a question.
Okay.
Hello of the grace. I need some grace now because he's running again. And if I end up in that White House of garbage, I am going to scream. Okay. Now listen, you said about learned behaviors of the peoples you work with. I have learned many behaviors from being in the Trump's family. I learned that when the first sign of trouble, run, just like Ivanka is in the Miami hiding, I go to France for spa. Okay. So what are some learned behaviors that you learned from all these wonderful people you work with, who will never hire me or put me on their show for guest appearance, but that's okay. I don't want you. What are some learned behaviors that maybe I can learn from them?
Well, Melania, first of all, I want to say you are going through a lot, I'm sure, at all times because of your life. I can't imagine having to look at what you look at every day.
It's a lot.
What I will say is that I've learned to just be impeccable with your work. You know, working for Robert and Tina, working for Issa and Prentice, all these people, they're very, very good because they care quite a bit. You know, there's a couple of ways you can be a writer. Like, you know, there's people who just come in and they're getting a check. And, you know.
Oh, I know about getting the checks. Yes, yes.
Yes, I know. I know you know about getting the check. But for me, even when I'm going out for a show, I always make sure that it's something I really like. And that allows me to really give 100% of myself to whatever project I'm in. Like, really just immersing yourself in, like, becoming, like, almost like a cult member of your show, just like becoming obsessed with it, because that's what's going to make you happier in the end. And it's going to make you feel good to know that you've contributed to something that you really care about. So I think it's just work ethic is the thing that I've learned to literally douse yourself in whatever you're doing, because it's a privilege to be able to do it. And I think that some people forget that, especially when they've been working for a long time. I think we're all realizing what a privilege it is now, because we're all on strike and we miss working a lot. I wish they would come back to
school. That's funny.
Yes, I know that you haven't done a ton of that, but some of us have to in order to afford things.
Oh, that's sad.
But you know, what you do is also work.
You know, I would argue, yes. Well, now my job is to avoid. So I am really taking in these lessons of dousing myself in avoiding Donald and everything that comes with him at all costs. You know, it's very hard works because I have to put on image. Yes, I care. Oh, nice. And then run for my life because, you know, things might not go my ways or his ways, which is really my ways.
I mean, so if he goes to jail, are you going to visit him or are you just going to find a new man?
You know, we do have our sexy appointments in the prenup we have listed, but they did not specify jail. So I'm having a lawyer look into that because I don't want to go.
Yes, I think that you shouldn't go. I think if he does end up in jail, I think that's when you should make a break for it.
You know, on the other hand, now that I'm talking to someone in the entertainment business, it makes me think, why argue? Just get body double. and send them in. He won't.
Yes. I mean, you have had several body doubles that we have seen. It's a lot of those times that wasn't you. Sure.
That was debatable, but it was a little bit, this is what happened. It's my sad story, really, Grace. It's my sad story because it was, people were debating, and I have to say it was a mistake with the television. It was the proportions didn't go right, and I did not have a body double, but that mean the idea out there, and so I never could get a body double. Do you understand the tragedy?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, because then the word was out. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Really, it's hard. It's a hard life. Well, thank you so much. Be best.
Best.
Well, thank you so much for playing. What now? Where can people come follow you? Come say hello.
For now, I'm still on Twitter at GracieAct. That's GRACYACT. I'm at GracieAct on Twitter and Threads as well. I will definitely still be on Instagram. I'm like, is today the day I finally leave Twitter? I haven't left it yet. And I don't think I will until the strike is over, because that's where I get a lot of information about the strike, or, because that's how I kind of find out about things sometimes. But as soon as the strike's over, I'm leaving that hellscape. Elon Musk is completely ruined. But for now, I'm still at GracieAct, GRACYACT.
Cool. Well, come find you, and it might be named like five other things by the time we do. So we'll see.
Yeah, because there's still you heard that he does not have a trademark for X.
Oh, that's amazing. So, everyone starts your X.
Yeah. Microsoft does. So
amazing. Clash of the tech bros.
Yes, team no one.
Yeah.
Team all of them need to go.
Cool. Well, all right, great. Well, we'll see you soon.
Well, there you have it. You can follow the podcast on my page at Lauren Logie. Updates and inside info on my email list, LaurenLogie.com. Thank you to Annie McCutcheon for editing, Edward Silla at Radio Misfits Podcast Network, and Maddie McLennan for making the podcast art. Thanks to our listeners for bringing us back for another season. We'll see you soon.
The preceding was a presentation of the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. Find our other great shows on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and at RadioMisfits.com.